Welcome to day 260 of my Everyday Bible with Rita Langland. We are entering the final 2 weeks of Bible reading that will see us complete the Old Testament. So since we are reading in chronological order, we're going to move back and forth between some books in the Bible that overlap historically or time-wise. We are going to begin today in the book of Ezra, read today and tomorrow from that book. We'll move into the book of Haggai because Haggai was a prophet who prophesied during the same time frame as the historical book of Ezra. Then we'll move into Zechariah, another prophet who prophesied during this time frame that the book of Ezra covers. Then we'll move on to Esther because the historical events that are recorded in the book of Esther overlap with what was happening in the book of Ezra and also Nehemiah. So then we'll finish Ezra and move into the book of Nehemiah and then Malachi, and then we will have totally completed the Old Testament. Today, as we begin the book of Ezra, I want to give you a little bit of background. As you know, if you've been following along in my Everyday Bible, we're at the point in Jewish history where the Israelites or the people of Judah have been captives in Babylon for 70 years. And now comes this amazing and historic moment when biblical prophecy is about to come to pass. Jeremiah the prophet had prophesied that for 70 years, the people of Judah would be captives in Babylon. And then at the end of that 70-year period, a leader in Babylon named Cyrus, who was actually a Persian king who took over the Babylonian kingdom, would be used by God to issue an edict that would free the Jews to return to Jerusalem to rebuild the temple of God. That was written by Jeremiah the prophet in the 25th chapter of Jeremiah, and also by Isaiah the prophet some 200 years before, where he actually names Cyrus the Persian by name. And it's undoubtedly the work of Daniel, who by the time Cyrus came into power was an elderly man, but still serving in the court of the Babylonian kingdom. He undoubtedly showed Cyrus these two prophecies, one from Isaiah, one from Jeremiah, that talked about him being called by God to issue this edict, send the Jews back to Jerusalem, and that it was his divine calling. Imagine that, a heathen king fulfilling the will of God. It shows the faithfulness of God and the ability of God to use any person on the earth for his purposes. And that is how we will find the book of Ezra opening. But it's important to understand that the book of Ezra covers a period of about 80 years of the history of the Jews in their captivity and their return to Jerusalem. That 80 plus year period is basically broken up into two parts. The first 23 years is the section of history where the very first group of Jews or Israelites return to Jerusalem. They are led by a man named Zerubbabel, and they begin work on the reconstruction of the temple. Then we're going to see that they become terribly discouraged because enemies discourage them, and they do not complete the work at that time. Then we'll see the entrance of Haggai the prophet and Zechariah the prophet, who are going to come in and try to encourage them to continue what God has sent them there to do. That's why, because we're going chronologically, we'll start out in Ezra, the first few chapters for 2 days, move into Haggai, move into Zechariah, and then Esther, and return to Ezra to complete it. And that's because of the history that's happening. And then the second period that Ezra covers is about 60 years in length, and that's when a second group of Jews returned to Jerusalem. And this group is under the leadership of Ezra, who is a priest and a scribe, and he really works hard for the restoration of Jerusalem and also the spiritual restoration of the people, because he finds, when he gets back to Jerusalem, a group of Israelites who are very not committed to the Lord, and there's a big mixture with pagan culture as well. And so he begins a spiritual revival and restoration. And then after Ezra has been there for approximately 13 years, we will see the entrance of Nehemiah, who comes as a governor with an army escort and comes to rebuild the wall and fortify Jerusalem. So this is the history that we're going to be studying as we're going through Ezra and Nehemiah and Esther and also the prophetic books of Haggai and Zechariah. But it's an important time because it's the last few books of history before we end in the book of Malachi, the prophet, just before entering into the New Testament. So this is an exciting time that we're reaching in our reading. And I believe you're going to really glean a lot of powerful insight from these books that we're about to embark on. So beginning today, we're starting at Ezra chapter 1, verse 1 from the Amplified Translation. Now, in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, almost 70 years after the first Jewish captives were taken to Babylon, that the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah might begin to be accomplished, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, so that he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom and put it also in writing. Thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, the Lord, the God of heaven, has given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he has charged me to build him a house at Jerusalem in Judah. Whoever is among you of all his people, may his God be with him, and let him go up to Jerusalem in Judah and rebuild the house of the Lord, the God of Israel, in Jerusalem. He is God. And in any place where a survivor of the Babylonian captivity of the Jews sojourns, let the men of that place assist him with silver and gold, with goods and beasts, besides free will offerings for the house of God in Jerusalem. Then rose up the heads of the fathers' houses of Judah and Benjamin, and the priests and Levites, with all those whose spirits God had stirred up, to go up to rebuild the house of the Lord in Jerusalem. And all those who were around them aided them with vessels of silver, with gold, goods, beasts, and precious things, besides all that was willingly and freely offered. Also, Cyrus the king brought out the vessels of the house of the Lord, which Nebuchadnezzar had brought from Jerusalem when he took that city and had put in the house of his gods. These Cyrus, king of Persia, directed Mithridath the treasurer to bring forth and count out to Sheshbazzar, who is Zerubbabel, recognized as the legitimate heir to the throne of David, the prince of Judah. And they numbered 30 basins of gold, 1,000 basins of silver, 29 sacrificial dishes of gold bowls, 30, another sort of silver bowl, 410, and other vessels, 1,000. All the vessels of gold and of silver were 5,400. All these Sheshbazzar, the governor, brought with the people of the captivity from Babylon to Jerusalem. Chapter 2. Now these are the people of the province of Judah who went up out of the captivity of those exiles whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away to Babylon, but who came again to Jerusalem and Judah, everyone to his own city. These came with Zerubbabel: Jeshua, Nehemiah, not the author, Sariah, Realiah, Mordecai, not Esther's relative, Bilshan, Mispar, Bigvai, Rehum, Bana. The number of the men of Israel, the sons, meaning male descendants of Parash, 2,172. The sons of Shephatiah, 372. The sons of Arah, 775. The sons of Pahath Moab, namely of the sons of Jeshua and Joab, 2,812. The sons of Elam, 1,254. The sons of Zatu, 945. The sons of Zakai, 760. The sons of Bani, 642. The sons of Babai, 623. The sons of Azgad, 1,222. The sons of Adonikam, 666. The sons of Bigvai, 2,056. The sons of Adin, 454. The sons of Ater, namely of Hezekiah, 98. The sons of Bezai, 323. The sons of Jorah, 112. The sons of Hashum, 223. The sons of Gibar, 95. The sons of Bethlehem, 123. The men of Netophah, 56. The men of Anathoth, 128. The sons of Azmaveth, 42. The sons of Kiriath Arim, Chephirah, and Be'eroth, 743. The sons of Ramah and Geba, 621. The men of Michmas, 122. The men of Bethel and Ai, 223. The sons of Nebo, 52. The sons of Magbish, 156. The sons of the other Elam, 1,254. The sons of Harim, 320. The sons of Lod, Hadid, and Ono, 725. The sons of Jericho, 345. The sons of Senah, 3,630. The priests, the sons of Jediah of the house of Jeshua, 973. The sons of Immer, 1,052. The sons of Pashur, 1,247. The sons of Harim, 1,017. The Levites, the sons of Jeshua and Kadmiel of the house of Hodaviah, 74. The singers, the sons of Asaph, 128. The sons of the gatekeepers of Shalum, Ater, Talmon, Akub, Hatita, and Shobai, in all 139. The Nethinim, the temple servants, the sons of Ziba, Hasufa, Tabaoth, the sons of Keros, Siaha, Padon, the sons of Labanah, Hagabah, Akub, the sons of Hagab, Shalmai, Hanan, the sons of Gidel, Gahar, Reiah, the sons of Rezin, Nekoda, Gazam, the sons of Uza, Pasia, Besai, the sons of Asna, Meunim, Nephisim, the sons of Bakbuk, Hakufa, Harur, the sons of Basluth, Mehida, Harshah, the sons of Barkos, Sisera, Tema, the sons of Neziah and of Hatifa, the sons of King Solomon's servants, the sons of Sotai, Sophereth, Hasophereth, Peruda, the sons of Ja'alah, Darkon, Gidel, the sons of Shephatiah, Hatil, Pochereth, Hazi, Baim, Ami, all the Nethinim, the temple servants, and all the sons of Solomon's servants were 392. And these were they who came up from Tel-Malah, Tel-Harshah, Cherub, Adan, and Immer. But they could not show a record of their fathers' houses or prove their descent, whether they were of Israel. The sons of Deliah, Tobiah, and Nekoda, 652. And of the sons of the priests, the sons of Habaiah of Hakoz and of Barzillai, who had taken a wife from the daughters of Barzillai, the noted Gileadite, and had assumed their name. These sought their names among those enrolled in the genealogies, but they were not found. So they were excluded from the priesthood as ceremonially unclean. Zerubbabel, the governor, told them they should not eat of the most holy things, the priest's food, until there should be a priest with Urim and Thummim who, by consulting these articles in his breastplate, could know God's will in the matter. The whole congregation numbered 42,360, besides their men servants and maid servants, 7,337, and among them they had 200 men and women singers. Their horses were 736, their mules 245. Their camels were 435, their donkeys 6,720. Some of the heads of families, when they came to the house of the Lord in Jerusalem, made free will offerings for the house of God to rebuild it on its site. They gave, as they were able, to the treasury for the work 61,000 derricks of gold, 5,000 minas of silver, and 100 priests' garments. So the priests, the Levites, some of the people, the singers, the gatekeepers, and the temple servants lived in their own towns, and all Israel gradually settled into their towns. Chapter 3. When the seventh month came and the Israelites were in the towns, the people gathered together as one man to Jerusalem. Then stood up Jeshua, son of Jozadak, and his brethren the priests, and Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, and his brethren. And they built the altar of the God of Israel to offer burnt offerings upon it, as it is written in the instructions of Moses, the man of God. And they set the altar in its place upon its base, for fear was upon them because of the peoples of the countries. And they offered burnt offerings on it to the Lord morning and evening. They kept also the Feast of Tabernacles, as it is written, and offered the daily burnt offerings by number, according to the ordinances, as each day's duty required. And after that, the continual burnt offering, the offering at the new moon, and at all the appointed feasts of the Lord, and the offerings of everyone who made a freewill offering to the Lord. From the first day of the seventh month, they began to offer burnt offerings to the Lord, but the foundation of the temple of the Lord was not yet laid. They gave money also to the masons and to the carpenters, and gave food, drink, and oil to the Sidonians and the Tyrians to bring cedar trees from Lebanon to the seaport of Joppa, according to the grant they had from Cyrus, king of Persia. In the second year of their coming to God's house at Jerusalem, in the second month, Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, and Jeshua, son of Jozadak, made a beginning with the rest of their brethren, the priests and Levites, and all who had come to Jerusalem out of the captivity. They appointed the Levites from 20 years old and upward to oversee the work of the Lord's house. Then Jeshua, with his sons and his kinsmen, Kadmiel and his sons of Judah, together took the oversight of the workmen in the house of God, the sons of Henadad, with their sons and Levite kinsmen. And when the builders laid the foundation of the temple of the Lord, the priests stood in their vestments with trumpets, and the Levite sons of Asaph with their cymbals, to praise the Lord after the order of David, king of Israel. They sang responsively, praising and giving thanks to the Lord, saying, "For he is good, for his mercy and loving kindness endure forever toward Israel." And all the people shouted with a great shout when they praised the Lord, because the foundation of the house of the Lord was laid. But many of the priests and Levites and heads of the fathers' houses, old men who had seen the first house, Solomon's temple, when the foundation of this house was laid before their eyes, wept with a loud voice, though many shouted aloud for joy. So the people could not distinguish the shout of joy from the sound of the weeping of the people. For the people shouted with a loud shout, and the sound was heard far off. This is the end of today's scripture reading. Before we move on to today's devotional, I wanted to let you know about some other free resources available to you from Hidden with Christ Ministries. We have a weekly teaching called Word for Wednesday, available on video through YouTube, or as an audio podcast available on all the major podcasting platforms. Just type in Word for Wednesday, Rita Langland, on YouTube or on your favorite podcast channel, or you can visit our website at hiddenwithchrist.org to find a library of hundreds of Bible teachings by yours truly, Rita Langland. And now let's continue with today's devotional. As we open in the book of Ezra, we find a magnificent example of the faithfulness of God and the reality that when God speaks, He always brings His word to pass. As we mentioned in the introduction, that the incident that occurs in the very opening of the book of Ezra, that Cyrus, the king of Persia, sends out an edict saying that every single Israelite or Babylonian captive or exile that was living in the kingdom of Babylon, who was willing to return to Jerusalem and rebuild the house of the Lord, was free to go. And not only that, Cyrus sent financial provision to assist them in rebuilding the temple for the Lord. He also did something absolutely stunning, and that was he returned the items of silver and gold that had been taken by Nebuchadnezzar, the previous king, several kings before Cyrus, when Jerusalem was originally attacked and captured. Nebuchadnezzar took so many of the items from the temple and from the palace. And here, Cyrus, the Babylonian monarch, returns these items and sends them back to Jerusalem. That is something so stunning and so amazing. And yet it shows how faithful God is and how able God is to restore when it looks like the enemy of your life has totally wrought destruction that could never be reversed. We see this as an example that God is able to restore and to rebuild. And that is an amazing thing. But it also shows us that when God speaks something, He makes sure it comes to pass. Some 200 years before Cyrus the Persian made this edict, he had had Isaiah the prophet prophesy about it, that this day would come when this leader named Cyrus. Now, Cyrus wasn't even born when this was spoken by the Lord to Isaiah, who wrote it down. Then we also have the prophecy from Jeremiah, who also stated from the Lord that the Israelites would be captives in Babylon for 70 years, and that at the end of 70 years, they would return to Jerusalem. So the Lord spoke this word twice, two different prophets, more than 100 years apart, and through them, He confirmed to Cyrus, king of Persia, the Babylonian king, that he was called of God to do this amazing work. I love the faithfulness of God. Whatever you're going through in your life, understand that God's purpose is restoration for you and that He's faithful to all the promises that He makes. You can call on Him and see Him do miracles for you and bring restoration in your life. That's who he is. He's a restorer. He's a rescuer. He's a builder. And he loves to rebuild and restore people's lives. The second point that I want to bring to your attention from the story that we heard today is in relation to the response of the people, the Israelites who are living in Babylon. Their response when they were given this opportunity to return to Jerusalem with the king's blessing, the Babylonian king's blessing. What happened is that only some of the people responded. You would think that all the people who were of Israelite extraction, meaning those who had originally gone 70 years before, obviously they would be elderly people by then, but those who are born in exile, so they are Israelites by ethnicity, born in Babylon, but they had heard for years the story of the captivity, of God's promise to restore them back to Jerusalem, because the Israelites were very good about giving oral history to the next generations. So they knew that there was a promise that God had spoken through the prophet Jeremiah and through the prophet Isaiah, that they would be restored to Jerusalem. So what happened? We are told that approximately 46,000 and a little bit more than 46,000 people, so less than 50,000 people, responded to this offer of the Cyrus king of Persia to go back to Jerusalem. That may sound like a lot of people right now, but it wasn't a lot of people. There were many who stayed in Babylon. And it's that point that I want to bring to your attention today. To go back to Jerusalem was a costly thing on many levels. First of all, the trip itself was over 700 miles of desert that they would have had to cross between Babylon to return to Jerusalem. They have no vehicles. It's a time when you walked or you rode a donkey or you rode a horse if you were so rich that you possessed such a thing. And 700 miles of barren desert is a long way to cross. So there's no doubt that many elderly people who would have loved to go back didn't go back because they weren't physically able. So we will leave those folks alone. But think of the others, their children and grandchildren, who would be young, strong, and able to return to the land of their forefathers. Why would someone who's been in captivity for years not want to return to the land of promise? Comfortable? Made a life for themselves? Too much effort required? I'm very prosperous here in Babylon. I've made my business here. Why should I go to the trouble of going back to Jerusalem? That response obviously is not a very spiritual response, and it's the response of many people when God calls them to do something. I'm comfortable. It'll be hard. I don't know what it'll be like. I'll be in unfamiliar territory. I don't know if I'll make it. There are many excuses that people use when God calls them to do something for him. These people were given an opportunity by God himself and the king of Babylon to return to the land of promise, God's precious city of Jerusalem, the place of their forefathers, the place of spiritual blessing for the people of Israel. And yet, only a handful returned. It challenges us in our day. Are we responsive when God calls us to do something that looks hard, that looks challenging, that looks uncomfortable, that looks risky, that requires sacrifice, that requires us giving up our comfort zones? How responsive are we to the Lord when God calls us to action that is part of his will for our lives? The vast majority of those who returned to Jerusalem were actually from the tribe of Judah. Some were from the tribe of Benjamin, as it's stated in verse 5 of Ezra 1, but Benjamin was the smallest of the tribes. We also had people from the tribe of Levi, the priests and Levites, as also mentioned. But the majority, the vast majority of those who returned were from the tribe of Judah. And it's actually historically correct that from this point in history that the people of Israel were called the Jews more than any other, by any other name from that point forward. And the word Jew actually comes from the word Judah. Now imagine, those who returned to Jerusalem were those who had a more spiritual attitude and a more dedicated heart to the Lord than any of the others who stayed behind. The task that they had before them was a spiritual one. They were being sent by God and the king of Babylon to rebuild the temple in Jerusalem. They had to be so dedicated to the Lord to be a part of that journey that not only the difficulty of getting there, but they also faced the difficulty of where they were going to live. They knew that Jerusalem had been destroyed, so they were leaving houses that they lived in, that they had made comfortable for themselves, and going into the unknown, not knowing where they would lay their head or whether they would have a decent house to live in with their family. Oftentimes, consideration of people's comfort or living conditions is often a deciding point as to whether somebody will decide to obey God's will for their life or not. There have been many potential missionaries who backed down on the opportunity because of the thought of the difficulty of the living situation. They had a comfortable place to live where they were coming from, and they weren't willing to suffer any hardship in living conditions to do the will of God. My question for you today is this. If God asks you to do something that's difficult, but it's for His purpose, that may not be comfortable, that may be risky, are you willing? Are you ready? Will you lay down your life to do the will of God? That's what we see here in the book of Ezra. People who are willing to lay down their lives, risk everything, go into the unknown, give up comfortable houses and businesses to do the will of God. Are you willing to do the same? That's a question that God has for you today. Consider that as you go through your day and as you observe your current circumstances, because God's calling to you. God bless you and give you a victorious week. Don't forget to check us out on Facebook or send us an email to tell us how My Everyday Bible has been a blessing in your life. You can email me at Rita, R-I-T-A, at myeverydaybible.com. And if you can help us financially by helping to support the cost of broadcasting My Everyday Bible and keeping it in the app stores so that you can access it on your smartphone, you can make a donation, a small amount or large, whatever you can do, or even make a monthly donation of a few dollars a month to help us stay on the air. And just click the donate button on your app, or you can go to our website, myeverydaybible.com. If you have enjoyed My Everyday Bible, please share it with others. It's our heart to get the Word of God out around the world. And don't forget to check out our free library of Bible teachings at hiddenwithchrist.org. We believe you will be blessed because faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the Word of God. Have a victorious week.